This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us today. I think we have a very interesting topic. I have learned a lot in doing my homework. Today, we're going to be talking about Charlottesville's proposed Human Rights Commission. And I hope everyone wore their St. Patrick's Day green. Ladies, I don't see any green over there. Well, you know what? I didn't wear my green on the outside. Exterior green, and the computers here were fighting me today and everything else. I hope your day goes a little more smooth. If you're out there, you haven't been outside yet, please, St. Patrick's Day today, put on your green. Again, I'm Rick Moore. We are going to be talking about proposed Human Rights Commission for Charlottesville, and we're going to talk about that in a greater time and a larger expanded concern as well. Our guest today, Rennie Johnson, she was the co-chair of the city's Human Rights Task Force, as well as Abigail Turner, who was a member of that task force as well. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking your time to be here instead of having your corned beef and cabbage. All right, so let's talk about the Human Rights Task Force, because I want to jump right into it. Why the name? Because to me, when I hear human rights, I immediately think of third world countries, trafficking of little girls, and it seems to be more dire. I don't mean to imply that what we're doing isn't dire, but it takes me to the Charlottesville City Council stepping into topics that many people feel that they shouldn't when they propose anti-drones or allowing marijuana and small issues. And why does it have the name Human Rights Commission?
It has that name because it's Charlottesville can pass an ordinance of this type because it's authorized by the Human Rights Act of Virginia. So it doesn't cover all the issues that you mentioned necessarily. It's really focused on discrimination on the basis of a number of categories. And this really grew out of an effort a year ago when the City Council decided to form a human rights task force, and they asked us to come up with a recommendation about whether they should have a commission or not.
All right. I'll take that. Thank you for answering that question. Because whether it's human rights or, and what I read into this as I did my homework was discriminatory, it's all important in our area. Again, Rennie Johnson and Abigail Turner here as we talk about the Human Rights Commission proposed and the Charlottesville City Council will be making a decision on this hopefully in April, although it's been pushed back multiple times, right, Rennie?
Yes, it has. And that's what bothers me. We've been dealing with this issue for a few years now. This isn't new. And it's worrisome to me that we are constantly pushing it back. So hopefully in April, it will be the last time that we will have to put it on hold, and hopefully we will come to an agreement by then.
And what if there is no agreement? Or what if the decision is made that we don't need the Human Rights Commission?
That would be extremely unfortunate.
All right. We'll get into some of the more specific details on this as we go through the show today. Again, WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Thank you for listening to us today. Our guest, Abigail Turner, and Rennie Johnson, both members of the Human Rights Task Force that was put forth to determine whether or not a Human Rights Commission was needed in the city of Charlottesville. Ladies, let's talk about the need for this commission. There are certainly statistics and data that show there is, are there statistics and data that show that there's discrimination? Or is this the need for this all based on stories that are told?
It's a combination of both of those. First, we looked, or not first, but one of the things our report looks at first is the history of race discrimination, mm-hmm. the sordid history of race discrimination in Virginia and in Charlottesville. From slavery to the Jim Crow laws, where blacks were disenfranchised and had few other rights, to Charlottesville's own massive resistance, where the schools were closed to avoid integration and allowing black children to attend our public schools, to the removal of black families and businesses in Vinegar Hill. And then we looked at the statistics. Our report has a number of statistics about the inequities in the public schools between African-American children and white children, children with disabilities and other children. We looked at housing and home ownership issues. And then we heard through two public forums specific stories. And Rennie and other people in the commission talked about their own experiences in the community.
You talk about the history of Charlottesville, but for many people, that is what it is. It's a history. It's not current. It's not modern day. And you're talking about putting forth a commission in the modern day era.
Because it may be history, but it is ongoing. It never stops. This has been going on. I'm 53 years old. I've been here my entire life. I have been subjected to this. My children have been subjected to it, and they're only 17 and 20 years old. So this is something that is apparent now and is happening right now. It hasn't gone away by no means. And it's very, very unfortunate that people seem to think that it doesn't happen. They're living in denial if they feel that that is the case, because it is alive and well.
There was an interview, and I don't remember whether this was I heard it on radio or read it in the newspaper, etc. Mm-hmm. But there were a quote from a female African American, and I believe she was on the task force, that said that most businesses in this area do not have a problem. Meaning, what I read that as is they are not discriminating in any way. Mm-hmm. And the thing that caught me was she's quoted as saying most don't. But that still means that some do.
Exactly. And I'm aware of that article. I'm familiar with that article. Most don't. What does that mean?
So
that's telling me, and I know differently, a lot do. There are a lot that do. And, I have had the experience of going into a store or going into a business and being ignored while someone white standing there is being helped. And I've been standing there for 10 or 15 minutes. You see what I'm saying?
I do. And let me share this with the listeners real quick, is that Rennie Johnson, co-chair of the task force, a female African-American. Mm-hmm. Abigail Turner, here with us today, also is a white female. So just for those who are concerned, listeners who, obviously this is not a visual program, who want to know about that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Does it matter? Do you think that it matters that Rennie, that you're black and Abigail is white, does that give any more truth or structure to the conversation we're having today?
Sure it does.
I think the important piece here is the task force deliberately, from the council's selection, mirrored a cross-section of the community. Blacks, whites, people who had gay preferences, business people, I'm a lawyer, the legal community was represented. Mm-hmm. And the other piece that's very important is, I believe the quote that you referred to is from a member of the task force. Mm-hmm. And the task force was unanimous in agreeing, and we went on record, that we thought there was still discrimination going on in Charlottesville. And it's not just race discrimination that we're talking about here. All it's kinds. Disability, mm-hmm. it's sex discrimination, mm-hmm. And other areas.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about the Human Rights Commission, is the goal to be... because, Renee, you're talking about being a customer in a store.
That's one thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. So are we talking about customers versus businesses? Would the Human Rights Commission also be working to prevent discrimination for workers and employers, for citizens versus the government, or citizens versus their neighbors? What are some of the end goals when it comes to working the Human Rights Commission? Ladies?
You can answer. Then I'll answer. I'll follow you.
Abigail first.
The first emphasis that this council chose to put on this, mm-hmm. and we agree with this, the first thing the commission will do will be to investigate and have meetings and suggest solutions mm-hmm. for systemic issues of discrimination. Right. Mm-hmm. So if there are systemic problems with a major employer or perhaps with the city government or the city schools, or the police department, or a big landlord. Mm-hmm. They will look at those issues and make concrete suggestions, and that's very specific in the ordinance. The second area will be ongoing dialogue, carrying forth the work of the Dialogue on Race, which looked at race beginning in 2009 and said the city has problems, we need to address it. And the original proposal for a commission came out of one of the subcommittees on the Dialogue on Race. And then the third feature will be receiving complaints from individuals and processing them and helping them get remedies. The third part is a piece that Dave Norris has proposed, and that's what will be voted on next Monday. Monday week, not tomorrow.
We'll get into that a little later in the program about some of the specifics of that. But what I gathered from reading is that Mr. Norris's proposal is sort of where everyone comes together, sort of in that middle ground. True? Not true?
Well, that's pretty true because remember, it started with a dialogue on race, and there's a belief that if the facts of race discrimination or sex discrimination or discrimination on the basis of disability are put forth to the commission, they make findings that they can recommend solutions to the city council. That's part of coming together. There's also the education piece, which I just talked about. And then the third piece, if people, individuals feel discriminated against, they can get assistance from the commission staff and pursue their individual issues.
And that's one of the big concerns, I believe, is that the enforcement part. Part three is what you were talking about, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. We are talking today with Abigail Turner and Rennie Johnson, two members of the Charlottesville City Human Rights Task Force, who did the work, came up with a lot of the proposals for Charlottesville's Human Rights Commission, still under discussion, mm-hmm. Looking for a vote in early April. All right, 11:15 here on Charlottesville's WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call.
And support for WNRN Today coming from T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC-certified printing, an internationally recognized standard for production and consumption of forest products. T&N Printing can be reached at 434-971-8976 and t-nprinting.com.
WNRN and Blue Mountain Brewery present the Red Wing Roots Music Festival, July 12th through 14th, at Natural Chimneys Park in Mount Solon, Virginia. Hosted by the Steel Wheels and featuring Del McCurry Band, Sam Bush Band, Tim O'Brien, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and J.D. McPherson. The full lineup and tickets can be found at redwingroots.com.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for listening. This is listener-supported independent music radio, WNRN. I'm host Rick Moore. We're talking with Abigail Turner and Rennie Johnson about the proposed Human Rights Commission for Charlottesville. Rennie, you were talking about being black in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. I want to know, can you describe, I mean, you went into, you didn't describe an incident specifically. Can you do that?
I can do that.
Are you comfortable doing
so?
Oh,
yeah, I'm fine. This is an incident that took place downtown. And this involved children. And this was during Halloween when the businesses there give out candy for children. I was down there this one particular time, and I had my kids with me. So this was a while back. But we went to the different businesses to collect candy. The kids had costumes on. There was one little African-American girl that went to this little business down there. And she, of course, she did not have a costume on, but she had her little candy bag. And she went up to the door, and the lady came out, and the lady totally overlooked her. She did not give her any candy. So she was giving out candy to everybody else, and I said, excuse me, why aren't you giving this little girl some candy? She's been standing here with her bag open. Her reply was, well, she don't have a costume on. And I said, and that's really important. This is for the children. This is for all kids. It shouldn't matter whether they have a costume on or not. She said, well, we're not supposed to give them candy if they don't have a costume on. I said, you know what? That's not what this is about. Because the majority of the kids that were there were white kids. It were a few black kids, mine included, but the majority were white kids. So I made such a big stink about it. She did end up giving this little girl candy. But I knew what that was all about, and it had nothing to do with that costume. So that's one thing that stuck out in my mind, that really stuck out in my mind. And I can go on and on and on, and I have other things, but I know we don't have time for it. But that was one thing, just dealing with children, for that to happen with a little girl, that really bothered me.
All right, so let's talk about how the Human Rights Commission would work then.
Mm-hmm.
So if a parent came to anyone sitting on the Human Rights Commission,
mm-hmm.
what are the steps to go forth with following the complaint? Abigail, do you want to go first?
I think one of the inquiries that are questions that would be asked of the parent, did the parent think that this is happening to a number of children that day,
mm-hmm.
or similar events happening in service from businesses on the mall or in Charlottesville?
Mm-hmm.
If the parent said, yes, I think it happens frequently or it's widespread, mm-hmm. then the commission member could take that issue to the commission, mm-hmm. and ask them to approach it from a systemic point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a problem with merchants serving people without regard to race on the mall or in Charlottesville generally?
Right.
If the parent thinks it's only happening to her child, then the parent would be given information about and assistance in filing an individual complaint and seeking help with that. The staff can help investigate the complaint. If there's a finding of discrimination, the staff can invite both parties, the merchant and the parent, to negotiation or mediation. If that's resolved, that's the end of it. If there's not a resolution, then the staff can write up their report and ask the commission to plan to hold a hearing on that.
Seems like a lot of steps. Do things with that many steps, are they functionally forward? I mean, do you get results from that? Or do people at some point, whether whichever side of the debate they may be on, toss those things aside and say, too much trouble, nothing's going to happen?
Well, the important piece of this really gives us a hometown solution to persistent problems. And we are confident, and the reason we made the recommendation is that Charlottesville wants to and needs to handle its own problems and do that in a timely way. So these steps are a lot quicker than filing a lawsuit or complaining to a federal agency.
One of the issues that has been brought up is, I think, Abigail, you mentioned it as the third step, which is the enforcement part. And that has been a big part of the debate, correct, Rennie?
Yes, it has. It has been a big part of the debate.
Is why the Human Rights Commission, what sort of enforcement they would have, and whether or not there is any enforcement that should be allowed.
My whole take on it, Rick, is that folks need to be held accountable for their actions. Not saying that someone has to pay out millions of dollars, go to jail, none of that. Educate. They need to be educated. And then if, I don't know a great deal about the law part of any of this. That's why Abigail, she's the brain on that. But just for my take on it, as an everyday Joe, I just want to see people held accountable, not being put in jail, not being made to pay millions and millions of dollars in fines, but educate their employees, educate the groups need to be educated on how to deal with this and to prevent it from happening. It's all about educating. And then the law part of it, I will pass to Abigail because she's the brain on that.
Well, is that part of it? Is that it's the threat of enforcement that becomes the education? Because I think we can all say that educating your staff as to whether or not they should behave like that or how they should behave is quite different from a commission enforcing a policy upon a business owner or a landlord.
Well, the education piece is two pieces. Mm-hmm. One is businesses or other people, landlords, will be able to say to the commission staff, we want to avoid these problems.
Exactly.
Will you please educate us?
Mm-hmm.
And staff can go meet with and provide training or information about how to avoid problems.
Right.
And we know from the other human rights commissions across the state that they are frequently asked to do that. The second piece is employers may say, or landlords, that something they did, they didn't know or they don't think is a violation of some anti-discrimination statute.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps when they come in for the first meeting, they can be educated that way. But you're right, the threat of enforcement is also an important piece here.
Mm-hmm.
11:24 here on WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our guests today, Abigail Turner and Rennie Johnson, both members of Charlottesville City's Human Rights Task Force. Don't forget that it is St. Patrick's Day. Put on your green. And there is a winter storm warning out today, 6 p.m. Today to 6 p.m. on Monday, mostly in the valley and surrounding counties. Just the chance of rain, sleet, and snow up to 1 to 2 inches. Keep that in mind. All right, ladies, and again, there's so much information on this that at some point I felt like I was gathering some information that said one thing here and then something else there. So you're going to have to educate me and the listeners today. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I read is that as proposed, is that the Human Rights Commission will have the same kind of authority as the Planning Commission or the Board of Architectural Review, correct?
That statement was made early on. I have not studied the scope of the authority that those two entities have. It will be a commission that's fully sanctioned, authorized, and budgeted by the city, And their duties are specifically set forth in the ordinance.
Well, because one of my concerns is that the Board of Architectural Review can stop a business from doing what they're doing. You can say, I don't like your design. It's inappropriate for that area that you're in. So stop. So how does a Human Rights Commission function in that rule? If my business is brought forth under a complaint, am I forced to stop doing business for a while? If the commission goes forth and declares that and let's say it's the second or the third time, because I think we already discussed that the first time, it's a lot about education. Mm-hmm. But let's say it's the second or the third time. And so for many people, my business is a repeat offender. What happens in the end? Am I just brought forth and it's publicly declared? Don't do business with these folks because that's what we've determined? What is the worst case scenario here?
Well, I don't think it's the worst case scenario, but let me answer what happens. If there is not successful mediation of the issue and the report goes to the commission, they can call a public hearing. All the hearings are public, and they can hear the evidence. The business can put on its evidence. The complainant, the party who's been discriminated against, can put on his or her evidence. The commission makes a finding, and the commission can recommend corrective action. But under Virginia law, the commission itself does not have authority to say, stop your business, stop doing business, unlike the Architecture Review Board. The commission can ask the city council to authorize the city attorney to file a lawsuit, but only the circuit court, the state court, can issue what's called an injunction. That's the legal equivalent of saying stop. Ooh. And we expect that will be very rare.
What's the cost of doing this? Because we always come back to cost. Whether you're for it or against it, and you can say that's really not that much in the scheme of things, or that's too much when we could spend it over here, always comes back to cost. What's the proposed or identified cost of the Human Rights Commission?
I know that the city's involved in putting together their budget now. My understanding is that city staff was recommending a cost of a budget figure of $180,000 for the commission.
Yeah, that was my take on it too. That it was set aside $180,000 to cover this.
And this would begin when? When would the commission start? Let's say they vote yes in April.
That's up to the council. It could begin as early, I suppose, as July 1.
$180,000. Let's say that's the salary of 3 to 4 teachers. Right? You hear back from this, I'm sure that as members of the commission, you hear back negative feedback onto why or other ways to spend this money that could be just as productive or even more productive, possibly.
I haven't heard a lot of that, a lot of negative feedback. Some, but not much. But my take on it is, if you can spend $1 million on bricks on that downtown mall, you can sure put $180,000 into something like this to help people. So I don't want to hear a lot about budgets. They were all of this budget talk, and I was so confused. I didn't even understand what was going on. But whenever I hear anything about budget, I think about that $1 million that went in those bricks downtown. So that $180,000, they should be able to come up with that with the breeze. And that's my opinion. And I hope I'm not getting anyone upset or stepping on any toes by saying that. But that's my bottom line, and that's my take on it.
11:30 here on WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Rennie Johnson, Abigail Turner here. We're talking about the planned Human Rights Commission. I guess it's not even planned yet. It's proposed. Planned might be after a positive vote in April. Call us up if you have a question or a comment, 979-0919-877. WNRN Rocks. That's 979-0919. Angie's here today to patch you through. 967-6762 if you need the toll-free line. Who wants to jump on this? We already have agencies that are designed to look for problems, enforce concerns, whether they're government groups, whether they're advocacy nonprofits. Do we need more? Do we need this? You say, I mean, you've already answered that as a yes, but why do we need it if we already have these other organizations designed to do this?
Because, in my opinion, yes, you got these organizations, but a lot of them take so long. And then you got to, it would be good to have a panel of individuals, a diverse panel, so that you can gain more trust from these people, from all people. You know, people, like you said earlier, they get tired of nothing being done, and they feel nothing is going to be done. So a lot of times, they're not going to a lot of these agencies. One, because it takes so long. And then two, because they just say, oh, well, nothing's going to happen.
Well, why don't we fix the organizations that we have rather than start another one?
Because we need to have a human rights commission. We need something with that heading, human rights commission.
All right, we have a caller. Let's see. We got Jay. Hey, Jay.
Hey, how are you, Rick? Pleasure. May I please first state that Virginia is one of the most racist nations in the 50, that Virginia is divided by race. I have been blacklisted from every building within two cities that I've lived in within 2 years. When I lived in Colonial Heights, I'm still not allowed in any of the buildings that I could walk to within the vicinity of 2 miles, based upon the fact that they blacklisted me with pure hatred from word of mouth from one building to another. I currently live within Forest Hill Avenue in Richmond, and every business that I can walk to has blacklisted me. I'm talking about the major corporations.
All right, hey, Walt.
Such as Walmart.
Excuse me, Jay.
Yes.
I understand that. I mean, I feel for you, and I appreciate you making those comments. But we're in Charlottesville.
Yes, I understand, but Virginia itself is so hatefully and hard in its racial division that
okay,
nobody
so do we
really
take,
likes
so do
anybody.
We take the Human Rights Commission and expand it to the state? I mean, are you for this happening in Charlottesville or against it?
I'm not really sure, because I know that the administrators with the bureaucracy and the red tape probably won't get anything done the way they should.
All right. I appreciate. Keep listening. And
but please understand that Virginia is one of the most hard and racially divided states within the 50. I've lived within 23 different states from the time of my birth to 15, and I never noticed such hard hatred between people of different races and colors,
right,
you know, within such diversity in one state.
Thanks, Jay.
That's what I simply wanted to say.
Well, I appreciate that. And what I, you know, don't forget, we will keep going with our guest for another 25 minutes. The show will be posted as a podcast, cvillepodcast.com. Folks are welcome to go on there and make your comments and ask your questions there as well. All right. Phone line is open on the toll-free 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Walt, I see you're on the other line. Hang tight for just a minute, because we need to thank a few people.
Support for WNRN comes from Charlottesville's Parking Center, inviting you to Charlottesville's historic downtown mall for world-class restaurants and diverse shopping destinations. Downtown's historic carousel is returning, giving rides to all ages March 22nd through 24th from noon to 6. 140 downtown businesses can validate your parking. You can find the shopping bag logo in merchant windows. Where else but downtown?
Hi, I'm Julia Wanch, health educator for the Thomas Jefferson Health District, inviting you to kick the smoking habit. The Charlottesville Free Clinic is starting its spring series of support group sessions of Quit Smoking Charlottesville. The sessions are open to the entire community in a friendly and supportive group setting. There will be a wide range of informative speakers and no advance registration needed. The sessions are free to all community residents and happen every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. beginning February 7th through late April. All sessions happen at the Charlottesville Albemarle Health Department on Rose Hill Drive. For more information, please visit us online at SiegelFreeClinic.org. I'm Julia Wanch, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And we want to say thanks to our sustaining member, like Jennifer from Glen Allen, who's a member of the CD of the Month Club. It's easy to become a member and to join the CD of the Month Club. Just go to WNRN.org and click on Donate. Don't forget, next week is Fun Drive Sunday here at WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be talking with folks from the Senior Center to talk about their contribution to our area. Remember, that's because WNRN also contributes to our area. All right, let's see. We got a caller. Remember, we are talking about Charlottesville's proposed Human Rights Commission. Our guests today, Abigail Turner and Rennie Johnson. And we got Walt today. Hey, Walt.
Hi, how are you doing, Rick?
I'm well. Question or comment on the topic? We're the guests.
Yeah, I think you raised an important question. You know, why we have the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and other agencies that deal with these kinds of things, but and why do we need another local agency to enforce these laws? And I think it's a good question that needs a good response, and I think there is a response out there. First of all, the proposed commission would deal with more than just employment. It deals with discrimination in credit. It just deals with discrimination in housing. It deals with discrimination in public accommodations and private education. Also, the EEOC only deals with cases of complaints against businesses that are larger than 15, and this proposed commission would deal with cases that are of businesses that are smaller than 15. And lastly, my major question to the panelists who are excellent and experienced in this is, why is it that if I am fortunate enough to live in Northern Virginia and have a complaint, I get access to a Human Rights Commission that has worked for, you know, over a decade in places like Prince William, places like Arlington, places like Alexandria and Fairfax? But if I live south of what I call the new Mason-Dixon line in Charlottesville or Martinsville, I get denied access to that kind of protection.
All right. Thanks, Walt. Ladies?
All right, bye.
There is some protection, although it may not be vast, under the Virginia Human Rights Act. One can file a complaint with that staff, but that's a very small staff. And that's why the task force and some community groups out of the Dialogue on Race asked the Charlottesville City Council to form a commission, because we thought that Charlottesville citizens needed the same tools and the same ability to have issues of discrimination looked at as people in Northern Virginia.
Again, our guests today, Abigail Turner and Rennie Johnson, as we talk about the proposed Human Rights Commission here for the city of Charlottesville. We are taking calls 979-0919-877-WNRN-ROCKS. And we got a call from Carla. Hey, Carla, you with me?
Hey, Rick. Yeah, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for calling. Question or comment?
Thank you for covering this topic. My comment is that the example that was given about the little girl at Halloween and the potential violation there based on race, I've certainly seen horrible things like that about 20 years ago when I was first teaching. Walking kids down from Buford Middle School and just seeing the phalanx of personnel that would come into each store following us around is I had to wonder then, was it a fear of the teenager or fear of the race? And I think it was probably a hybrid of the two. But my question is, when a case either related to something that I witnessed then and still see, and what the guest had seen, how would that come before the commission? And at what level does that become a sort of he said, she said, and how would that kind of nuanced violation be addressed?
Thanks, Carla. All right, so step one, how does it, you know, we chatted about this early, and then Carla brings up a great point, which is, if it's just he said, she said, how do you proceed forward, and how is there any education and enforcement from that?
I believe she also said if she witnesses it, versus if she or some member of her family experiences it. If she's the witness to it, and the victim does not want to come forth, she can raise that as a systemic issue. I'm not sure that the ordinance directly speaks to whether, if she witnesses it, she can file a complaint. But the commission will be really open to hearing what all members of the community are seeing, what they are concerned about in terms of discrimination. And so it would either go through the systemic issue process, or it could go into the individual. As far as this he said, she said, typically there may be some documents that would shed light on these things. And so the commission staff will have authority to ask for documents of policies, for example. Today, with so many people using cell phone cameras for everything, it may be that there are cameras that record what was said. So it's to look and see what kind of concrete evidence one can find. And I don't want to discount the testimony of people who experience discrimination or who see it. If somebody says under oath, this is what I saw, that has to be weighed, and justice can also be done through personal testimony.
And if I may say one thing quickly, if this has happened, you can rest assured that it's not just going to be he say, she say. It has happened so much, and if this business have done this, they did it way more than just one time. And there are going to be a lot of people, or several people out there, that have been subjected to it. So it's going to be a lot more than he say, she say stuff. I'm pretty sure that there, I lost my train of thought now. I'm getting carried away.
Well, if it only happens, as many people say, if there's only one complaint that's made, then there are often a vast number of others who just didn't take the time to complain.
To do so.
979-0919. Call us up with your question or comment. 979-0919 and 877-WNRN-ROCKS. You should know those numbers by heart anyway, because next week is Fun Drive Sunday here on WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. So you can always get those erasable tattoos. Start today. Abigail Turner, Rennie Johnson here, talking about Charlottesville's proposed Human Rights Commission. Rennie was the co-chair of the City Human Rights Task Force. Abigail Turner, also a member of that organization. One of the things, and again, you're talking to an adult white male who did not experience, who grew up in a suburban town, who, I just don't have this as an issue in my background. So what I see when I hear that the proposed Human Rights Commission would probably be made up of a 9-member board, following these statistics that pretty much represent Charlottesville. So I do my numbers, and I found out that Charlottesville is 19.9% African American. So to me, that says that there's a 9-member board. 2 of them are black. Is anyone concerned that the other 7%, how do you find 7% or 7 members that you are confident wouldn't have a bias in any way could listen to this, to these complaints and information, and be sure that they're not going to go, come on, you're making too much out of something. Why, the little girl wasn't wearing a costume. The other girl had, the woman had every right to not give her any candy. How do you find these other seven people? Because for many people, this is a complaint about minorities against majorities. And if you're going to fill the board with majority, a majority group, how do you know that you're going to get any non-biased feedback?
I think that we don't assume that the commission will follow absolute race lines or absolute any kind of lines. But the council has a process for filling boards and commissions generally where people apply, you have to provide a lot of information, and then the council makes the decision about who's qualified. And I'm confident that the council will do that very sincerely and very ably. And it was not unlike the process of naming the members of the task force. We didn't all agree, but it was a cross-section of the community.
That's what I want to hear. All right, we got a call from Brian. Hey, Brian, you still with me?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, question or comment for our guest, Rennie Johnson, Abigail Turner.
Yeah, the one of your guests was commenting repeatedly about the $1 million spent on the bricks, and how, you know, if you can spend $1 million on bricks, you can spend $180,000 on this. And it just seems to me that, you know, we needed the bricks. The bricks needed to be replaced. It was a necessity. This is far from a necessity. This is a really ridiculous redundancy. It's like building a sidewalk next to a sidewalk. And just because you spend $1 million on something that's needed does not mean it's okay to spend $180,000 on something that's unneeded.
All right. Thanks. I'm going to let the guests talk about that. Thanks for the call, Brian. Rennie, you brought up the bricks. Your reply to Brian.
My reply to you, sir, is this. It's easy for you to say it's not needed because you've never been subjected to it. So... And as far as the bricks are concerned, I use that example all the time because, to me, those bricks were put down there for those businesses. And those are the businesses that a lot of those businesses are businesses that don't even want people of color down there. You go downtown on a Friday afternoon or go downtown to the wonderful Friday after 5, and you can hardly even tell that people of color even live in Charlottesville. So, yes, I'm going to continue to use that example. And unfortunately for you, I'm sorry that you feel that way, but it is needed. It is gravely needed here in Charlottesville. And once you have walked in the shoes that I have, or other people of color here, or people that have disabilities, or someone that is gay, then and have experienced being discriminated against, then talk to me. Thank you.
11:49 here on Charlottesville's WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call as we discuss the proposed Charlottesville Human Rights Commission. Our guest, Abigail Turner. And Rennie Johnson. Rennie was the co-chair of the Human Rights Task Force that put this proposal together. 979-0919-877-WNRN-ROCKS.
WNRN is supported by Rockfish Valley Community Center in Afton, presenting a spring concert featuring Jimmy Gaudreau and Mundy Klein Friday, March 22nd at 7:30 p.m. Although influenced by their bluegrass backgrounds, their harmonies, instrumental arrangements, and lyrics lend themselves to just about any style or genre of acoustic music. Advance tickets and more info at rockfishcc.org.
All right, looks like we have another caller. Ladies, I want to make sure that we spend a little more time on Dave Norris's proposal. But we'll take this call real quick. Brian, are you with me?
I am. I was calling back to let her know that I have been discriminated against. I am gay. And I think that she's full of anger and hate, and she's trying to make everything about race.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that, because I think one of the concerns, and Rennie, I'm sure you've had this as well, is there are a lot of, I don't know what the word I want to use, but people assume, there are a lot of assumptions that are made about someone's beliefs because they are black, or because you're talking on the phone with someone, right, and you don't know what Brian's sexual tendencies are. Mm-hmm. And so that brings forth, for many people, why we do need the Human Rights Commission. Mm-hmm. But let's talk into, and Brian, thanks, that was a great point. Let's talk for a minute, and I see we've got Danny on the line. Danny, hang on a second, mm-hmm, because the differences between the Human Rights Commission proposal originally versus what City Councilman Dave Norris has put forth. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that for a few minutes. Who wants to start with that? What the differences are and why those differences needed to be made to get this more likely to be voted for.
One of the concerns that Dave Norris and others had was how much of the commission time would be taken up with individual cases. Mr. Norris was particularly concerned that Charlottesville get to its systemic issues soon and that not be neglected. So he came up with a solution of permitting the city, if they chose, to contract out the first two or three pieces of the individual enforcement or individual complaint process to a qualified entity that is experienced in handling discrimination issues. That would allow the city to use its own staff primarily in the systemic, in resolving systemic issues. And so the design, and one of the main changes that he made, is the receiving of individual complaints, the investigation of those complaints, mediation of those complaints, and then a determination whether there's been discrimination or not, be done through a contract with a local entity. And then that report, if the issues are not resolved, be sent to the commission for further action. The other piece of that is the original proposal that the council was considering allowed the council to come back in future years and decide that they needed to do individual enforcement. And all the mechanisms were already in the proposal. Dave Norris's proposal would mean that the individual enforcement could begin soon, but it would take it would involve a contractor doing it and leave the city to spend much of its staff resources on the systemic issues and on the education issues.
Now, there is a, I don't want to say an internal fight, but certainly that's been made quite clear that there are, that Councilman Dave Norris and Councilwoman Kathy Galvin have sort of made clear their thoughts on whether or not we should have this happen. Mm-hmm. Can someone explain why Kathy Galvin is against this happening? I mean, is she talking about it? Oh, we don't have the money to spend on that. Is she saying it's just not going to work that way? I'm assuming that the two of you have been in enough meetings to know what her statement is as to why she's against this.
From what I can gather, I don't think Councilwoman Galvin feels that there is a need for a Human Rights Commission. I don't think that she feels that there is discrimination here.
I don't want to get too far into speaking her words,
right,
but I do know that she has made it clear, mm-hmm, at a couple city council meetings that she is not, in its current state, going to vote yes, and that's one of the reasons, mm-hmm, that Councilman Dave Norris has made a changed proposal. Mm-hmm. All right, let's take this call. We have Danny. Hey, Danny.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Welcome. You got a few minutes left. Your question or comment?
I'm originally from New York City, and I just heard your guest say, you have to walk in my shoes to experience discrimination. To the last caller, I'm an Italian from New York City, and I'm wondering where the Human Rights Council was when I was a kid growing up, when I had to walk through an Irish neighborhood and get, you know, a brick thrown at me, or walk through the black neighborhood to get to my school, mm-hmm, and a brick thrown at me, and you know, why do you need a Human Rights Council when you have the Constitution? It's all spelled out there. I'm just curious.
All right. Thanks, Danny. Now, we spoke briefly about this earlier as to we already have organizations, advocacy groups, and in Danny's case, the most, what many would say is the most important piece of paper in the history of the United States. Now we're adding another group. Other people have said that we don't need because there's so much paperwork to it and so many steps to it that it might not work. It would be prohibitive to not make it happen. Ladies, an answer to Danny.
The Constitution is not self-executing. Just because you have a right to equal treatment under the Constitution does not mean that you'll receive it. Danny's example is a good one because the ordinance does outlaw discrimination on the basis of national origin. But the reason the task force recommended a commission and that several members of the council are supporting it is because they want a local solution to these problems where a person does not have to go hire an expensive lawyer to enforce his constitutional rights to be able to walk safely through a neighborhood.
All right, just a couple minutes left. Why, two parts to this. Why has it taken so long to get to where we're going? Early April, what's the date? Abigail, you seem to toss it right out.
I think it's the 4th. It's Monday week.
All right, so the first Monday in April. Why is it taking so long to get here? And whether folks are for it or against it, they both have the right to come forth and talk about it. Mm-hmm. Why does it have so many folks who are against it? We've heard several callers today. We've heard Kathy Galvin. We know that she's against it. Why is it taking so long to get here? And why are folks, I mean, are there just this myriad of answers as to why they're against it? But why is it taking so far to get here?
You can go.
I think that partly is the city has been appropriately very deliberate to build the case. It really started in 2009 when the city council very wisely decided they were going to have the dialogue on race to talk about race issues. And as I mentioned earlier, this recommendation came out of a group from the dialogue on race, the original recommendation. The city thought a year ago there needed to be some in-depth work on it. They appointed the task force. We worked very hard to determine whether there is discrimination, whether it needed to be addressed, and on both of those there was unanimous agreement. We knew this was a hot-button issue in Charlottesville, and so this has been an opportunity for the community to speak in favor of or in opposition to.
Rennie, with just 60 seconds left, Tamara Winograd here for Les Temps Purdue. You've made it clear as to why you want this commission to be put forth. Mm-hmm. Do you have faith and understanding that as using our Constitution as a democratic society, that if it is decided against, what do you do from there? Do you say, you know, I lost my battle, or do you say we're going to try again in another manner?
Well, if we lose this battle, I'm hoping that we will still continue to fight for something. I would like to see more more people of color to come out and come to meetings, and I'd like to see more African American leaders or all get together and try to see what we could do as a next step if this does not come out.
All right, folks. The Monday, we believe it's April 4th. The first Monday in the month of April is when this decision will be made by Charlottesville City Council. Hopefully, mm-hmm. although we've learned that they've put it back many times now. Our guests today, Abigail Turner and Rennie Johnson, thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, next week, Fun Drive Sunday. I hope you'll listen in. And 979-0919, put that number down. Thanks, everybody.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel.
homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.